It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy, Renee, and Lori are all here. We're, of course, going to get you ready for the Apple quarterly results about to come out. We'll talk about the big kerfuffle over parental control apps. Did the Times get it right, or is Apple right? It's a little more nuanced than that, and we've got the details for you so you can make the decision. And we're very excited. It's time to buy new headphones. Lori Gill explains. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is
TWiT. This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 659, recorded Tuesday, April 30th, 2019, under the shoe of a drunken giant. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Hover. Register a domain name and build your online brand with Hover. Visit hover.com/twit to get 10% off your first purchase on any domain extension for the entire first year. And by Calm, the number one app to help reduce your stress, relax your mind, and help you sleep. Get 25% off a Calm premium subscription at calm.com/MacBreak. And by Envoy. Envoy builds beautiful modern software to help businesses elevate the physical workplace experience. With Envoy Visitors, you can greet guests with a welcoming, sleek iPad sign-in app while still protecting your people, property, and ideas. Start your free trial today at envoy.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we cover the latest news from Apple. And I should, a little program note, people are asking, where is Alex Lindsay? He's out on assignment. He's doing, I don't know the actual story, but I've been kind of hinted at that he's doing some kind of work that would of necessity recuse him from the show.
I believe he's off on the warrior's quest. He's like somewhere like meditating underneath a waterfall.
He's walking out with a Yaki spirit guide in the desert of the Sonoran Hills. We don't know what he's doing, but
he's taking.
Thank God Lori Gill is here anyway, because you'd never see Alex with pink hair, ever. Lori Gill, managing editor at iMore, we're thrilled to have you as our official replacement, and it could be a long-term assignment from what I gather. So thank you, Lori, for joining us.
Glad to be here. Glad to be invited.
We can make it, it official. Well, we just love having you on the show so much. And if Alex comes back, too bad.
We're gonna fight. Actually, I'm gonna drive down there, and we're gonna fight.
I think it'd be good. We could have a cage match.
Yep.
Only one will emerge.
I have been pumping iron lately.
Lori Gill, put him through a table.
I think it'll be like Dune trivia.
Lori'd win easy.
That's the movie and the book.
That's Andy Iannacco, Boston Public Radio's Andy Iannacco, IHNATKO.com. Thank you for being here, Andrew. And from the frozen north, home of the flooding, whatever river you're nearest, Renee Ritchie of IR.com.
Is the flood there truly?
Have the waters
the flood
abated?
Is still here?
Yeah.
No, the flood is still here. It's higher than ever. And they said it's going to snow this week. So I don't even understand.
My God. Mother Nature has gone mad. But you still have the best bagels in the world. So that's.
We do. We do. Take that, New York. Yeah. You went on pizza. We went on bagels.
All right, so the New York Times may be not a winner this week. Big article in the New York Times implying that Apple was cracking down on iPhone addiction apps, either because, one, Apple had its own screen time technology and didn't like the competition, or two, because secretly, this was the worst conspiracy theory in the article, secretly, Apple wants a watered-down iPhone addiction app. They secretly want you to use it more. So they made Screen Time, which does a little bit of it and is not as draconian as these apps. But the consequence was pretty significant. The Times said that Apple has removed or restricted 11 of the 17 most downloaded Screen Time and parental control apps. In some cases, Apple forced companies to remove features. In other cases, it pulled the apps from the App Store, and they particularly noted Our Pact, which was the number one parental control app, 3 million downloads. Our Pact, 80% of Our Pact's revenue came from the App Store. They they interviewed the CEO, Amir Mousavian, who said they are systematically killing the industry. I mean, that sounds bad. You just on the face of it. Well, then somebody emailed Tim Cook and said, boy, that doesn't sound good, and got a response from Phil Schiller that kind of maybe explained it a little bit better. Over the last year, we became aware that some parental management apps were using a technology called Mobile Device Management, MDM, and installing a profile, by the way, our pact did exactly that, as a method to limit and control use of these devices. MDM is the same technology, we should mention, that Facebook was using in that app that spied on what you were doing, that Apple yanked. It gives one party access to and control over many devices. It was never meant to be used by apps like RPACT or Facebook. It was meant to be used by a company on its own mobile devices as a management tool, where that company has a right to all the data and use of the devices. In other words, a company that gives phones to employees. The MDM technology is not intended to enable a developer to have access to and control over consumer devices. But the apps removed from the store did just that. So Apple says, MDM profiles can be used for hacker attacks, so we're protecting the people who use this app from being attacked, and B, it's against our rules, and C, these third parties are collecting a huge amount of information, often about kids. So that's a pretty strong argument. They also later released a press release, which I'll pull up here, that says the facts about parental control apps.
The truth about Flash.
Yeah.
It's a claim, not an argument. And second, there are three things that kind of got my attention about this beyond the actual subject. One, that's very, very nice that you respond to these claims when a user emails or tweets about it. But when I assume the New York Times asks Apple for a comment, they probably didn't get a comment back.
They got a comment, which they quote in the article. And this is one of the reasons I believe the New York Times, which is so anodyne as to be meaningless.
Right.
They said here, I'll read you the Apple response, initial response. But all that means is Apple didn't get it together. I don't know. In time.
Well, it's when the international newspaper of record asks for a comment,
you should.
They're going to be they're not bozos. They're not just someone who's going for YouTube clicks. They've got a story that they think is important and they're going for it.
I'm not sure that's true, because Schiller also claimed they didn't run the full comment Apple gave them, which is very like that's not something I'd expect from the Times. And also, I don't have any direct knowledge about this situation, but I do know people who formerly worked in these areas and did deal with it. And we saw this in the big hack, where quite often papers that we used to consider papers of record, and you know, with incredible integrity, have not listened to any of the responses that the companies have given them, even when the companies have gone over it and over it.
In effect, they have an agenda.
Incredible detail.
They have an agenda.
Yes.
Whether this is a full statement, I don't know. But this is the statement the Times quoted from an Apple spokesperson named Levine. We treat all apps the same, including those that compete with our own services. Our incentive is to have a vibrant app ecosystem that provides consumers access to as many quality apps as possible. It does feel like there might have been a dot, dot, dot in there. However, these
Schiller
apps...
says exactly that.
Yeah.
Schiller says they did not print their statement.
Yeah, the Apple press release said, when we found out about these guideline violations, we communicated them to the app developers, giving them 30 days to submit an updated app. In other words, they could have updated their app, removed the MDM content to avoid availability interruption in the App Store. Several developers released updates to bring their app in line with these policies. Those that didn't were removed. That seems fair. So, Andy, do you think that Apple, what do you think is going on?
I think that Apple has a problem in moving the goalposts for app acceptance or not screening apps the way that they should. Number one, they're telling the exact truth as they understand it, which meant that they allowed a whole category of apps that violates and threatens user privacy to be on the App Store for a good length of time. or they waved it through because at the time it wasn't very, very important. I think this is above and beyond this one category of apps. This is something that we see all the time when you talk to developers, that there's something that got approved, and then when they're doing an update, suddenly something is not okay anymore, or they're going to be making them go through hoops to use a different API or a different solution that the programmers were using for the previous two generations of apps. And it's part and parcel of the problems that programmers have in trying to deal with Apple and getting things into the App Store. And the second difficulty here is that and I don't know that this is necessarily something that we can fault Apple for, but there is a lot of difficulty that comes into play when Apple decides to compete with developers one way or another, because Apple will always give itself certain rights and certain privileges that, because of security, because of privacy, and because of anything in Category 3, reasons to be named later, that they can't give to the general developer community. So this is always going to be a problem for Apple, where they're saying that that developers can't create this kind of an app that absolutely underscores how good the iPhone experience can be, but Apple can instead. So if Apple decides to release an app or release a feature, that third-party developer is never going to be able to compete. So I do believe, overall, I do believe what Apple is saying, that they're not trying to make people use iPhones more. That is how they do that, through great user experience and great build quality and emojis. That's how they get people to use their phones more. And I don't think that they're trying to steal profits from developers. However, I do think that this illustrates two or three ongoing difficulties that Apple has in running the App Store.
Renee,
go ahead,
Lori, and then I have a question.
In regards to what you're saying, Andy, I think that there's a couple of things that I completely agree with, and maybe one or two things I'm not sure I agree with. One of them being that the communication between Apple and developers seems to be pretty poor. And specifically in this article, or in this situation, the New York Times points out a developer that was trying to receive feedback from Apple saying, what did I do wrong? Tell me what I can do to fix it. And didn't receive any clear direction on what they were supposed to do until the last minute. Meanwhile, Phil Schiller is emailing somebody who reads Mac Rumors immediately to tell them what went wrong. So why aren't these developers receiving the same amount of immediate interaction? It sounds like if these people are being honest about the situation, it sounds like they did everything they could to try to be, you know, in line with what the App Store wants so that they could keep their businesses open. I believe that nobody's going to, you know, like try to sneak through the system if they legitimately want their company to stay open. But Apple didn't do anything to help that developer or those developers. They just told them, you're doing it wrong, and we'll get back to you if you have any questions, and then didn't get back to them and just said, yank, not yours. So so I do agree that there needs to be better communication with the developers. Where you're saying that Apple is sort of abusing its right to have its own apps in the App Store while pulling other apps that are similar, in this particular situation, I disagree, because Apple made it really clear why they pulled these apps. It's not because they're parental controls apps. It's because they are apps that violate a very specific privacy feature of the
although the you'd, NDM, you'd agree, Lori, that Apple reserves certain capabilities to itself. It may not be possible for a third party to make an effective parental control app without using MDM.
That's where I have so many feelings about this. That's where it gets to be difficult, because on the one hand, Apple is saying to these people, you can't just collect all of this data from children. And the only way that we can protect these children and their parents is to stop you from doing it. But on the other hand, there are these parents that are saying, but I should be allowed to decide whether I want these companies to collect this information or not. So it's you know, from the outside looking in, it's like, yeah, I could see why Apple did that for privacy protection. But yeah, I could see why parents want more control over how their children use apps and are willing to take that risk and should be allowed to take that risk.
Yeah.
I have a question there are a couple of points that bother me a little bit about what Apple said. First of all, Apple announced MDM at WWDC 2018. This is not a new technology. It's been around for a while. Presumably, these apps have been using it for a long time. Why did Apple not do something about it until screen time came out? That's one. Two, if this, as Apple says, is such a risky technology that allows hackers access to the phone, why do they let businesses use it? If MDM is so bad, then how come some people can use it? Renee, do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff going on here. One of the things is, you know, a lot of the things, so I want to separate it. Like the article, I think the article is completely bogus, but I think Apple did a lot of things wrong here, and both that those things can be true. You know, Apple took way too long to make screen time so that a lot of companies came in and filled that gap because people absolutely want those features. And because of Apple's security model, they could only do it by using either the kind of certificates that Facebook used or full-on MDM. And if people still aren't sure about that, it's like what a BlackBerry would use in a corporation to manage all the data, all the context, all the information on your device by using MDM technology to do it. It was their way of hacking around the limitations of iOS. In a perfect world, Apple would have made screen time a decade ago and would have had a screen time API 9 years ago, and I really hope they have a screen time API this year, because Apple's usual pattern is introduce a feature, test it for a year, then introduce a reliable, stable, private API the next year that'll let all these apps do the same functionality in their own way with whatever value add they want to do, and in a way that's trustworthy, secure, and private for developers. For customers. I know the developers want that too, so that's the proper solution to all this. But I think Apple just... They did not care about screen time or didn't even think about screen time because their eye of Sauron was on other features until that article went live in the Wall Street Journal with those PACs. I forget, they were hedge funds, whatever, saying Apple doesn't care about screen time. And then Apple had to spin real quick. And even though they ditched a bunch of features from iOS 12, had to redevote resources to getting screen time into iOS 12, and then they looked at the market and went, holy crap, all these people are using MDMs to do this. And if we don't do something, the other article in the New York Times is going to be Apple fails to act in preserving and protecting the privacy of children. And so they had to like stumble all over themselves to get this fixed as well. And it's not ideal, and it's not excusable, but it's the kind of mistake that happens when you're dealing with an app ecosystem.
Tony,
and the
Fidel,
last thing I'll add quickly is just that Apple has a long history of actually encouraging people to compete with them. Like there are better mail apps. There's Spark Mail. There's Fantastic Hal. There's Halide Camera. And if you do it well, they will give you an Apple Design Award.
And there's no end of alternative browsers. Apple could say, well, we've got Safari. We don't need Brave and Chrome.
And screen time is not a feature that you're going to not buy and buy another app based on.
But here's what Tony Fidel said in a tweet storm after the New York Times article that might be a little bit telling. He said, Apple's screen times still has many holes and deficiencies. Yep. Their solution was a rush job. It's very non-intuitive to use. And he says, by the way, I don't have a dog in this hunt. I just have kids, so that's my interest. Tony, of course, was a former Apple designer who did the iPod. Apple should be building true, and this I agree with, APIs for screen time, so the privacy concerns are taken into account instead of limiting users' app store choices. There needs to be an API. And I think that actually is an excellent point. So that third parties can do this and do it responsibly and safely. If Apple really is committed to parental control and screen time management for yourself and for your kids, make an API. There's a health API. And there's a rich ecosystem, by the way, of apps that integrate with health as a result.
It's in Apple's best interest to make an API. It will actually help them sell more iPhones to more people who care about that feature if they have an API for developers.
Apple, he writes, or tweets, I guess, is that writing? I guess it is. Apple, until you have a real API, let the third-party apps be available to App Store users. These devs are trying to help, not steal data. The only reason they have to do what they do is because you don't provide a proper API. In other words, there's no other way for them to do it.
Sadly, they can't do that. Once they know about it, if they don't plug it,
MDM gives that company a lot of information about
and control. Like they literally can turn on and turn off things on your phone.
Yeah.
And if you want to trust that company that's doing that for you, the parental control company that's doing that for you, then that's wonderful. But how many companies have we seen that got hacked? So how many chances are there that this parental control app in somebody's kid's phone or iPad or iPod Touch or something gets infected and you know all that information is really used nefariously? Not just like we can trust our parental controls companies, but can we trust them to protect it too?
Or just an employee searching through it, like we saw that with. Like, it wasn't that they were just listening to the words, but they were seeing your addresses too. And people don't think about that until it comes out.
Yeah. It shows how valuable the developer community is because they can act a lot faster and respond a lot more quickly than an Apple OS update can. So I really do think that they help the community, the entire user community out by showing here's how rich parental controls can be. And here's how aggressive they can be and effective they can be. And I hope that Apple was looking at that while they were developing their own features and improving those old features. One thing I'd like to clarify. I don't think that Apple was wielding the ban hammer on them. But what I was trying to get at is that they're going to be, because of the way that Apple works, it's inevitable that Apple is going to run into problems like this, where the Apple Music app is always probably going to be a richer experience than what you can get with a third-party app, because Apple... Let's just say that Apple's internal app approval process is a lot more streamlined, and the lines of communication are a lot more active than they have when talking to other developers. And also, because Apple is the highest level of trusted developer, they're always going to grant themselves permissions to get the job done that they're not going to grant to other developers. So I'm not saying that I was never saying that Apple is doing anything to try to diminish an outside developer, but this is the sort of headbutting that's always going to happen so long as Apple is creating their own apps and competing with third-party apps. So that then, unfortunately, developers are just going to have to find a way to live, drive, and survive inside that environment.
But that's where it gets really dangerous, though. If you build your livelihood on this app that saw success, and then without you knowing what went wrong, Apple destroys your business. I think that's the thing that's a little disappointing, but it's disappointing to hear that there are companies that just completely lost their business because they didn't things weren't properly done so that they could fix it in order to keep their app. And obviously they can now fix that problem and remove the MDM and re-present it to Apple for review and get their business back on track. So, you know, obviously it doesn't mean like they're going to go under and never have any more money and their business is shut down and now they have to go work at McDonald's. But when you get your app into the App Store, it's been there for 10 years. It's making plenty of money. And then just without you really understanding what went wrong, Apple says no and takes it away from you. That's a really frustrating experience for a developer, especially coming from a company that heavily promotes how important it is that app developers are part of the community. And I know it's difficult to, you know, in such a huge ecosystem, but I do think Apple could have done a better job of communicating with these app developers. And if they did, because, you know, this is just information that we get from people whose feelings were hurt because their app was pulled and, you know, maybe they aren't being as honest as they could be about the situation. But if that's true, it's clear that Apple needs to communicate better directly with app developers.
There's a platform problem in general that we have, because you have like these giant companies, whether it's Amazon or Google or Facebook or Apple, and there are obvious holes in what they offer. And we've talked to people too, and my boss will say this, you know, like there's a big hole in this market, but it's also obvious that it's a big hole. And if it's obvious to us, it's obvious to that company and they're going to fill it. So the question becomes, can we make enough money fast enough before they fill it that we're going to be okay when they choose to fill it? And we see that with Google, we see that with Facebook, we see that with Amazon, and we absolutely see that with Apple. And it's where the lines start to blur behind built-in capabilities and open opportunities for developers. And some will gladly tell you they never want to set up their business under the foot of a drunken giant.
And there's your show title. Let's take a break. You know what? This is why this show is great, is this was a complicated subject. I think the Times got it wrong, but I think Apple's response wasn't completely... informative, and I think the nuances of this were very well laid out by you guys.
The first part was terrible when Apple says that there are still, because the apps that are still there are terrible. I would have led with the Phil Schiller thing, saying we're going to work with developers to make a better solution immediately. Yeah. That would have been my lead.
Yeah. Yeah, do an API. You know, you got one for health. It makes perfect sense. Let's take a break. We've got lots more, including the answer to a question we posed last week. But first, a word from Hover. It's time to register a domain name. I just read a great piece by a developer who said, If you don't have your own domain, your own website, you are letting other people tell folks who you are online. And that's especially true when you go out and look for a job. It actually came up for him because he was looking for a technical job. And the guy said, well, I don't see a lot of you on the web. You got to have a place to go that you put your best stuff. And it's not Facebook or Twitter. It's not Snapchat. It's your own website. But the first thing you've got to do is to register the domain name. And Hover is the place to do it. They don't do websites. They're not going to upsell you to 1,000 different things. They're a domain registrar, which means they're the place to go to look for a domain name. Like a .me. I have leolaporte.me. That is they have over 400 domain extensions, but I like .me because it really tells you, if you want to put a portfolio up or a page about yourself, your name .me is a great extension to use. A portfolio website, you know, if you're a high school kid and you want to put your awards, your best papers, your best work, get that .me extension. I just did a search on Hover for Laporte, and now I have a lot of the Laporte extensions, but here's Laporte.inc, Laporte.site, Laporte.page. How about Laporte.baby? Now, I think that's a great gift for somebody who's having a baby, to give them a baby site. Laporte.guru. Oh, I got to get this for mom. Laporte.mom. Laporte.mo. Laporte.desi. Laporte.democrat. Laporte.republican. Laporte.soy. I mean, this goes on and on. There are so many. If you're a dentist, get the dot dentist. If you're an attorney, get the dot attorney or the dot lawyer, dot company. There are so many great domain names at Hover. Dot me is a great place to start. As I said, I have leolaporte.me and I like it. By the way, the thing I love about Hover, their support is first class. When you go to Hover and you buy a domain name, you don't get page after page of upsells. No. It's a clean and simple user experience and interface, and the DNS couldn't be easier to manage. So, in fact, they make it even easier than that, because if you want to attach your domain to, say, WordPress.com or any other of a dozen different sites, Hover Connect lets you do it with a few simple clicks. So here's Inside Twit, and I can look at the DNS. I can assign it. Right now it's DNS simple. Hover will do the DNS as well, but you most often will assign it to a larger. And by the way, I love these forwards. Like if you did insidetwit.com/weather, you could forward it to the Weather Network. Or actually, it already is. Insidetwit.com/movies goes to IMDb. Forwards are a great way to forward your email, for instance. Hover, by the way, has a very good email service. Just $20 a year, you get 10 gigabytes. $29 a year, you get a terabyte of storage. So when you get the domain name, you can even have your email attached to it. This year, find the domain name for your passion. Hover.com/twit. That's a special URL to get 10% off your first purchase of any domain extension for the entire first year. 10% off at hover.com/twit. We thank Hover for supporting Twit. All my domains are registered at Hover, except for the few I can't get off those other guys. Hover. Some of these other guys are kind of skeezily sticky, if you know what I mean. Hover.com/twit. Get 10% off, and you're supporting us by using that special domain name. So we had a question. Go ahead, Andy.
I just auto-renewed a few Hover domains that I bought as late as 5 years ago because they're really cool domains. And at $10, $15 a year, I'm willing to continue to be the domain owner of Chairman Honeycrisp.
You'll just park them.
Chairman Honeycrisp. Do you have that really? Oh,
as soon as Colbert said that, I said that might be an interesting domain to have.
Well, I'll give you an example. If you're ham, you can, and I think this is a really good thing to do. You can register your call sign. I'm w6twt.org. Actually, I'm .net.org and a bunch of other things. So that's another nice way to do this. If you're a ham, to take your ham call sign and get that domain name. I think it's really a great thing to do. So we wondered last week, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first, Apple and Qualcomm's settlement in court or the announcement that Intel was no longer going to do 5G modems? Well, Intel says it was after the settlement, and it wasn't long after. right? It was just a few hours after the settlement that they decided, we're okay, good. We can get out of this mobile 5G thing. We're done.
We had one customer, and then we had none.
Bob Swan, the new CEO at, I think he was interim, and now he's official, I don't know, at Intel, said the company concluded there just wasn't any money in the business after Apple and Qualcomm settled their ongoing dispute. In quote, and this is in an interview in the Wall Street Journal, in light of the announcement of Apple and Qualcomm, we assessed the prospects for us to make money while delivering this technology for smartphones and concluded at the time we just didn't see a path.
Yeah.
Nobody was going to pay us.
Yeah. And it's a harder thing to do than we thought. And our modems really aren't very good, which even Apple admitted privately, not in public. Yep.
And then weren't there adjacent stories where Apple declined to buy their, or they couldn't come to a deal to buy their modem technology, but their head of modem development is now at Apple?
Yeah, there's one way to do it. Hire, don't acquire. Yeah, so anyway, that's the answer to the, it's rare, you know, often we have these questions about the inner workings of something like that, and you don't know for decades. You know, we only learned who Deep Throat was like 10 years ago. And so you think, well, someday, if I live long enough, I will know. Well, no, a day later, you'll find out.
I was at the NS North conference this weekend, and they had Ken Kishinda talking, and he's wonderful. And he was telling the story again of how he made the iOS keyboard. And somebody asked why it took so long to get to cut and paste. And he said, well, I was the one engineer working on the keyboard, and I wanted to do it. I just couldn't finish it in time for launch.
Wow.
And then in year two, I had to make the API because suddenly we were, you know, we had an app store to put out. So it took all of us just to get the app store ready. Then in year three, I could sit down and make the copy.
That still baffles me. We've always said that there's a limited number of people and they can't. And you knew that, like, I remember reading that the was it the Apple remote app that the guy who wrote it was reassigned, so it didn't get updated for years, and then finally he went back to it. And Apple is it's one of the biggest companies in the world with thousands of engineers, and still, why is that?
You don't want just anybody working on your stuff. You want that person who did an amazing job working on that. So, you know, I. Like the remote app is a great example. Are you just going to throw some rando on there and just hope they did it right? You're going to want that original guy that designed it to go back and make sure that it's, you know, kind of perfect. I think that's kind of the key here, is that the good designers do the great work, but there aren't as many of them, you know?
There's a saying that the perfect is the enemy of the good, that you can be so perfectionist that you don't even ship. And maybe Apple, like a remote app, could easily be written by somebody else. I think a second-year computer science student could write the remote app.
I mean, that was the gateway. You had to present to Greg Christie. If he was okay with it, you had to present to Scott. And if Scott was okay with it, it had to go to Steve. And Steve wanted to know who to blame for each and every component on each and everything that he cared about.
Yeah.
And when Steve needs one person, Steve means one person. And that now it doesn't work quite that way. But back then, that's the way Steve wanted.
And that was an example of the enemy is the perfect of the good, which Jobs knew. The perfect is the enemy of the good. That Jobs knew that because he also said great artists ship.
Yeah.
He knew that you can.
You got a ship too, Leo.
Yeah, you got a ship. You can really be doing a great, amazing, perfect job, but eventually you have to ship a product and it's not going to be perfect. But you got to push it.
Then you look at, like, what is that? The Luminary we were talking about last week. They have 30 engineers working on an app that at Apple would be done by 1.5 people.
Luminary, which is that podcast app, got a lot of heat this week too.
Yeah. Did you ever figure out how that was working out for
So, thanks to Marco Arment, who really kind of called Luminary out on the carpet. So, let's just give you the background real quickly. Luminary, a podcast app, they raised $100 million for an app a second-year computer science student could write. And but they had a business model, and this is what Spotify is planning to do too, of paid exclusive apps. Their plan is, I think it's $7 or $8 a month. And you'll get access to special podcasts. I said apps, I meant podcasts. Special podcasts that aren't available if you don't pay, and presumably ad-free. And then, just like Spotify, there'll be a ad-supported tier, which will include all the other podcasts. I don't have a problem with that. But somebody noticed, maybe it was Marco, and tweeted, hey, wait a minute. When Luminary, when I go to Luminary to download my podcast, it's not linking to my podcast. It's linking to Luminary proxy servers. At first, they thought Luminary was storing the podcast. And this is something that for years we've fought.
Yeah.
Because I know, you know, some small podcasts like the idea. You host us because it's expensive to do hosting, but we always wanted to host our own shows. We always wanted control of that. So anytime an app came along, and they have come along that said, well, we'll host it for you, we'd say no. But Luminary turns out wasn't doing that. But by proxying, they were basically, if somebody anybody who downloads from Luminary will come from one of a handful of IP addresses, all Luminary addresses. So the way this is complicated, but excuse me for the inside baseball, but the way podcasts figure out downloads, you can't just look at your log and say, well, it was downloaded a billion times, although many podcasts do that because that number is very big. It turns out many, many podcast applications will open multiple streams. So you may have five different downloads from one person, and so you can't count that. And the way you avoid that is we call it IP address deduplication. When we see the same IP address within a certain amount of time, like say 1 hour, we only count it as one download because we figure, well, their podcast client has opened five threads, and so we're not going to count it. So deduplication is really important to the counting of podcasts. And there's quite an art in the length of time. You know, if you make it too long, then you're going to miss downloads. You make it too short, you're going to get too many downloads. I think we found that 1 hour was about right. There's other problems too. Like everybody who is downloading Windows Weekly and works at Microsoft and is downloading at the Microsoft campus shows up as one IP address. Every Apple employee who downloads this show at Apple shows up as one IP address, Apple's. So we don't get to count them. So we know we're undercounting. But counting is important because that's how we sell the ads. The advertisers pay by the number of impressions. So it's important that we get as accurate a count as we can. And we know that we're slightly under. I'd rather be under than over. I don't want to inflate our numbers. Yeah. So the issue with Luminary is you would get five downloads, but who knows? If you had a million users using Luminary, you'd still only get five different IP addresses. You couldn't count them. So Luminary responded, thank you, Marco. He said, and Luminary said, oh, sorry, our bad. And they changed it. They fixed it.
Yeah.
There was also the issue, and I still don't understand this, that somehow they were stripping out of show notes, they were stripping links out. So podcasts that, for instance, were soliciting support on Patreon, the text was there, but the link no longer worked.
There were only 30 engineers, Leo. They couldn't do everything.
Long story short, a lot of podcasts pull out of Luminary. We decided not to once we heard that they weren't going to proxy the request anymore, that we would be able to count them. I want to be everywhere our listeners are, so that's fine with me.
Yeah,
I still don't get the idea of this app, particularly when you've got this app that's going to be competing with Marco's app. It's also going to be competing with Pocket Casts. Some of the most high churn rate, increasing sophistication year by year apps are in the podcast realm, and just the idea of starting from ground zero, creating any kind of a new podcast app without the legacy of someone who's been listening to users for years and years and years, and also figuring out how to make an app that makes sense across multiple domains, across multiple platforms. That's even before you start talking about, okay, what shows are you going to give me that's going to be worth my giving you $8 to $9 a month? I just don't get it.
I heard an explanation. I forget who it was from, but someone laid it out. It's like there is just a group of people and venture capitalists who want to hear we'll be the Netflix of something. And if you can say we'll be the Netflix of podcasts, even though it makes no sense to anybody who actually understands how podcasts have traditionally worked with RSS feeds and, you know, anyone can say all those things, they just hear that. They've heard of Serial. They've heard of podcasts. They've heard of Netflix. And it just sounds like money. So they just do it.
It's also possible. I think this is Spotify's modification. It might have been motivation. It might have been Luminary's motivation. If you could, for instance, get a podcast by somebody huge, I mean, maybe Joe Rogan or maybe Howard Stern. Let's say you got the Howard Stern podcast. He doesn't do them. You could reasonably get maybe a million people subscribing at $8 a month for that. if that's the only way you could get it.
Is that a, so that was the big debate, though. Much, is that a podcast? Is that an audio show, or does
it stop being a podcast
once it's no longer RSS?
Okay, and, yeah, if you can't put it on your iPod, it's not a podcast. I don't know.
But the big deal, the big deal is that you talk about cost of customer acquisition, and how much are you going to have to pay Joe Rogan to join your platform? Yeah. And he's smart enough to know that he's bringing more to the platform than the platform is bringing to him. And there's a difficulty with all of these people who are like the top YouTubers, the top podcasters, that by the time they become one of the top podcasters, they're not just somebody in their garage, even if they are literally in their garage podcasting. They are a corporation that knows how to run this as a business. You can't really give them anything that they don't already have. So they have their own distribution. They have their own. They can sell their own ads. They can do whatever they want. The old like 1950s, 60s, 70s like record producer idea of, hey, but you're not going to be able to get into all those stories. You're not going to be able to get on the radio unless you sign a record deal with us. That's way in the past.
That's kind of old fashioned, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now people don't even want that anymore. They say, well, why would I want to sign up with people who are going to maybe take a day to post something, or going to give me guff if I make a certain statement, or tell me about a certain advertiser that's pulling out because of something that I'm saying, won't let me advertise my own custom logo socks as half of the show.
Ironically, Joe Rogan pulled his podcast from Luminary. So he's not available. He was peeved. In fact, there was a great article in at Neiman Labs in their Hot Pod Pod newsletter. What does Luminary's very bad week tell us about podcasters' collective power? Thanks to Marco Arment, Federico Vitici, Joe Rogan, Barstool Sports, Podcast One, which is an aggregator. This was a very bad week for Luminary. I love this illustration. Monday, the 22nd, launch day, woohoo. Tuesday, call Michael Barbaro. He's the host of The Daily, which also declined. We can work it out. Wednesday, check if anybody in the office has an email for Joe Rogan. Thursday, check with server guy. What's the difference between caching and hosting? Friday, ask Dave, URLs, are they important? Saturday, call Tim at Apple back.
Tim Apple.
Sunday, and I don't get this. You guys have to explain it to me. So am I Rappaport?
Oh, I'm not the stage play. I'm not Rappaport.
Oh, okay. I don't know what the rest of that has to do with podcasting, but hey, thanks to Mark Arman. I'm going to give him a, anyway, I don't know what's going to happen to Luminary. We're on Luminary. That was one problem. If you pulled your podcast off Luminary, then they replaced your podcast with a big thing saying, well, these guys won't let you listen to your podcast on Luminary. So here's some other podcasts you might like better. So I didn't want to be in that game either. That's, you know, this is a stinky company. I don't like them, but I'm perfectly happy to be there, because if that's how you want to listen, go right ahead. However, we might recommend Marco Arment's Overcast as being an excellent alternative. And so I'm going to give him a plug, because he did a good thing for all of us. And I also might point out, and he is a podcaster, which has a lot to do with it, but he's added a new feature in Overcast, which we showed on iOS today, which is huge for podcasts. There's a share button when you're listening to a podcast. But it doesn't just share the link, which it could, but it could also share literally an audio clip from the show. It gives you a little trimmer that you. So if something cool happens in a show that you want to share on Twitter, by the way, that's really great to do for a podcast. It's the best. That's one of the things podcasts are a little bit behind, blogs and other text stuff. You can't really easily share a quote from a podcast. So Overcast has added something that, and I. This comes from being a podcaster, understanding podcasts, which Luminary clearly.
It really is a super exciting time for podcasting, but also because Google is very, very close to finishing its technology for being able to index the content of podcasts. Yes. So if you do a search for a podcast, it will also tell you that, hey, the show notes of this week's Mac Break said nothing about a 20-minute conversation about different versions of episode 4 of Star Wars, but they wound up getting distracted and talking about episode 4 of Star Wars. God bless them all.
God bless them all, everyone. So, but I do see paid podcasts in the future, not for us ever, and I promise, but in the future because of Spotify. They spent $230 million on Gimlet. you better believe they're planning to figure out how to put Reply All or something behind a paywall. I mean,
yeah,
they've got to get some of that money back. Maybe
I'm misunderstanding it, but there's already podcast companies that have premium tiers that include exclusive service. I'm not sure why this is different than that, like Stitcher.
It's very much like what Stitcher does.
So why is Luminary sort of like the bad dog in something that already exists?
Well, they were the bad dog because they hid downloads. I mean, that really was bad. Stitcher does not do that. But
Yeah.
But, you're talking about the paywall thing.
Right. Yeah. That seems to be a contentious thing for some people, which is why should I pay for something that I already get for free? And you know, how do I know I'm going to love these shows if I don't get to listen to them for free first or something like that? And I think I'm still a little confused on what Luminary is doing, aside from the mistakes they made. But just as a general idea, how it's special and different, because it's acting like it's one of a kind. And I don't think it is.
It's just picking an old wound. Like a lot of people in the podcast space they're used to watching Leo and Dave, like all the people who originated podcasts and made RSS. And it is a huge part. I don't want to call it like the hippie granola crunching original internet people, but there are people who believe that a podcast is something that has an RSS feed and that you can put that into any podcast. It's almost like email. You can put it into any podcast feed and get it. And yes, there's iMessage and WhatsApp and Facebook Messenger, but that's not email. Email is still free, damn it. And I'm going to plant my flag in it. And it's the same thing with podcasts. Yes, there'll be proprietary audio shows, but podcasts are free.
Well, and I don't have any problem with podcasts. And there are a great many, including many of my friends, that use Patreon and say,
yep,
voluntarily, optionally, yep, if you'd like to support us, you can give us some money. I think we did that early on before we took advertising. We had a tip jar. I wish Patreon had existed because there was no easy way to do that. However, we did do that. I like the idea of ad-supported podcasts. I don't know if I dislike that. It's just something, you know, the reason we don't do it and never would do it is actually much more basic than we want to be free. I remember Kevin Rose used to, with Dignation, his very, very popular podcast, offer paid subscribers advance access. So they'd get it a couple of days early. But we have such a technologically sophisticated audience, and so did Dignation, that somebody would just download it and make it available. And so they realized there's no way we can charge for this because they'll just put it online. And so I don't want to play whack-a-mole with people putting special content online. So I'm not going to charge you because I just can't stop you from distributing it. In fact, I like being in the position of saying, good, the more the better. Distribute it all you want. Give it to your friends. That's a good position to be in. We'll even leave it on Luminary. I don't mind.
It goes back to that great Ben Thompson article about some things, like traditional television, we're good with ads, and other things like live sports and live, you know, there's different kinds of models for different kinds of content that end up being better, more harmonious with those content types.
Yeah. Well, apparently our content's worth exactly what you pay for it. but you do pay with your attention, and you pay by listening to ads. And you know what really works for podcasts is the fact that, in fact, I've been saying it lately in the ads, listeners of podcasts are so attached to the podcast, they support the podcaster by using those special URLs and those special links. And it's much more effective. And I know you all do podcasts, so you know this. It's your relationship with the audience that makes podcasts so good for advertisers. It's also why I don't know about you guys, but we're very picky about advertisers because inevitably you, the listener, will blame me if it doesn't work out. If you don't like that mattress, you're not going to send an email to Casper. You're going to send it to me. So I don't want to introduce you to something you're not going to like. It's kind of that it's a two-way street. We want to make sure we preserve our appeal and our trustworthiness more than anything by only recommending stuff we use and really like. So that's why podcasting is good. Let's see. I'm looking for... Oh, Apple has announced that they're going to do the keyboard replacements in store.
Yeah.
Does that mean they're getting
within a day.
Given that they don't have any... nobody has any problems with the keyboards, that's kind of an interesting thing to do.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Leo.
Everybody is satisfied. It's just a small number of...
So I have the double click for or double type for the T and the I on my keyboard and my MacBook Pro. And I've been avoiding ticketing in specifically because I was a little concerned with how long it was going to take to get it fixed. And I found out that this program, thank you to everybody on Twitter who told me about that, that the program is kind of, they've been directed to do it fast. So I did take my MacBook Pro into Apple last Friday. And in the store, they did a quick cleaning job and just kind of tried to, that's step one. You don't immediately get your keyboard replaced. Step one is they do kind of a quick reconnaissance. They clean it out. Unless they can manufacture it themselves, which on mine, it's intermittent. So sometimes that would happen and sometimes it wouldn't. And they couldn't recreate that in the store. So they just did a good cleaning for me. It was wonderful and fast. And I was very happy with it.
Did it fix it?
So far. But, you know, that's the problem with mine is that it's not every time. So for now, it's good. We'll see what the next step is. But the person that helped me was very clear about next steps. If this happens again, we have this on file and we'll take care of the next step. They won't do a second cleaning.
They'll say, okay, yeah, it's a problem. So how do they clean it? With compressed air?
They took it in the back. I have no idea what they did.
Yeah, they do what's in the tech support article. They take, and I've talked to a lot of people who've done it at home too. And everything except for the spacebar key, I think the spacebar key don't mess with, but the other ones come off. And I've done that. I did that with mine that was giving me trouble because I didn't want to wait the week either. So I popped the key off. I compressed air it. I popped it back on and it worked fine ever since.
So yeah, it's crumbs getting air in there above the new membrane.
Yeah, I mean, my suspicion is that they designed these in a way to prevent things from getting in, but they weren't successful, and then things that get in now don't come out. That's sort of like the ultimate paradox in these keys. So you just got to open it up and spray them out.
Maybe they should have put two people on the keyboard design team.
I mean, that's the whole other story, right? Like there's three ID people leaving, which is unprecedented.
Lori, finish your thought because I
was just noting that I use compressed air on my keyboard because that is recommended by Apple, but I did not pop the key off because I don't want to ruin my keyboard. Right. Yeah. So I didn't have the nerve to actually pop the keys off.
All right, Renee, when you pop the keys off, any tips there?
I'm not recommending it for the faint of heart, by the way.
Can you break them? I mean, because that's always my fear is that you'll break the switch. The key is it.
The space bar will break. The space bar will absolutely break. So don't go anywhere near that. I didn't break it. But like, if you do break it, it's not like a standard Apple Care repair.
It's on you if you break it.
Yeah. I mean, like, I just did it because I was doing the video and I wanted to be a completist and I'm not normal and don't follow what I do. Right. But I do know people who have done it and people who do it. So
is somebody playing the didgeridoo in your house?
No, they're putting up. So they have a whole bunch of caterpillars outside that are building these massive earth walls out in the water.
Oh, wow.
And now they're doing something to reinforce something that broke. And
you're putting up berms. Are you afraid of shock and awe?
They're calling them dikes. But then one of the dikes broke and all the water came back in. So they had caterpillars out all night.
Oh, my God. You're like Holland. Them. Pretty soon you'll be raising tulips. What is going on? The dikes? They're putting in dikes in Montreal.
Well, it's not real dikes. They're like temporary. They have like sandbags. And these are just giant earth movers that are dumping huge amounts of dirt. And not like you have in a country that wants to do it for like fun and resort space.
But they'll be permanent, won't they? They're not going to come back and clean them up.
They didn't do it very well, so I'm guessing they'll sort of melt away into the water after a while.
Jeez, this does not sound good.
You should hire beavers. I understand you've lost them up from Canada.
Is there any really way good at that job to turn the berms into Pokestops? Because then it'd be worthwhile.
Or Harry Potter taverns.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm so jealous. There's people who live next door to a Pokestop and they could just set their Pokeball. You do?
It's right across the street from
me. So you just turn on you gotta get a Pokeball if you don't have one because you just turn it on and it will collect that every 5 minutes.
Yep. I got to the point where like my bag was just completely full and I couldn't spin any more Pokestops because it was.
I got a tip for you.
I always could do it.
You always have too many red balls. Mm-hmm. Just throw out hundreds of red balls and then you put you're auto harvesting. It's amazing. Yep. I'm so jealous. Renee and I have to work in a rural area with no Pokestops nearby.
It's like Lori is like battery farming Pokemon.
Yes, exactly. So have you installed the Wizards Unite APK yet, Mr. Renee Ritchie?
No, it's I'm not. I just can't, Leo. It takes up too much of my time.
You can't do it on an iPhone. You can only do it on Android.
No, you can only do it on an Android device right now. Yeah. So,
Karsten,
if you have an Android device,
you did it, right, Karsten?
I did it. There's still nothing is happening.
There's no stops or anything.
You have to be in the beta for something to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it notifies me every day that the Wizard Council needs my help to find foundables in my area, and then I open it, and there are no foundables.
There are no foundables.
Soon.
I can't wait till this game comes out. I'm a million points away from level 40 in Pokemon Go, and I promised myself I wouldn't play Harry Potter until I got to 40. But once you get to 40 in Pokemon Go, what's there left to live for?
Getting all your medals, getting all your Pokedex, your living Pokedex, your shiny. Don't get me started, Leo. It's just
care
it's
about
too much
that stuff. You guys go ahead.
Maybe Niantic is actually waiting to put out the Harry Potter game until you reach level 40. So you better get on that because we all want to play.
I hope not. It is out now in New Zealand and Australia. There were rumors that it was out in Thailand. They usually put out a new country on Friday, right? So anyway.
Yeah. So yeah, we're still waiting. Did it actually come out in Australia? Because what happened last I heard
it was
is that
fake email.
What happened was they accidentally sent out an email saying that you could get it, but you couldn't. Then they actually released it on accident and then pulled it like an hour later. So I don't think I've heard that it's actually in Australia yet. So much.
Mistakes happen. Mistakes happen. Patience.
It is going to be, I would think, it's much more complicated and evolved game than Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
My big fear is that, because Pokemon Go, we talked about this last time, me declaring Pokemon bankruptcy, is that it gets so involved, it no longer becomes, like, it's not a fun thing anymore. It becomes data management. And then I'm like, I can't.
No, you don't want to be grinding in any game.
Yeah. So, I was doing so much grinding.
Yeah, I kind of worried that just looking at the gameplay from New Zealand that it might have, the Wizards Unite might be a little grindy.
If I have to get Ron Weasley's stew every 15 minutes, I'm going to lose it.
I know. All right, let's take a little break, and then we will talk about the design team because there's something going on over at ID. But first, I want you to calm down, take a deep breath, get all the anxiety out. We don't want you to suffer in our next story, so go to calm.com. Actually, I'm a Calm Pro subscriber, Calm Premium, I guess they call it, subscriber, and I really love it. Calm is getting better and better all the time. It was the app of the year, Apple, in 2017, but it's come so far since then. They have so much now in Calm. There are still the guided meditations and the daily new one every day daily meditations. But also, there's a wide selection of master classes. This is so cool. Master classes on conscious parenting, gratitude, discovering happiness, rethinking depression, social media and screen addiction. Oh, dear. I think I might have to take that one. And a lot more. There's the Calm Body. I love this. 10-minute guide. This is new, too, and I'm really excited about it. Guided video lessons. They're video. A morning stretch, evening stretch, back care, mindful warm-up before you go work out. Oh, this is just so awesome.
Hello, I'm Christiane from Calm, here to guide you through a mindful warm-up. It's a dynamic full-body routine to set you up for your workout. We'll activate key muscles, improve your range of motion, increase your heart rate, and focus your mind.
I love these. Now, they're all audio, which means get Calm on your iPhone, and you can listen as you work out. You can listen as you go to sleep. Who doesn't love having a bedtime story read to you? Calm has bedtime stories, all kinds of bedtime stories, including children's classics like The Velveteen Rabbit, tours of famous places, Jerome Flynn from Game of Thrones.
Good evening.
Bronn is going to narrate.
My name's Jerome Flynn. And tonight, I'll be reading you a sleep story called Sacred New Zealand.
It's actually a tour of New Zealand.
Between filming Game of Thrones and my own travels, I've had the honor of visiting some remarkable places around the world.
I would listen to Bronn all night and know that I'm safe. and that the sellsword is going to protect me. What a great selection of stuff. There's also music. I was thrilled when I saw that Moby has released his new album exclusively on Calm.com. Isn't that cool? So if you want to hear Moby's latest, which is some ambient music designed for work or meditation or sleep, I like having it actually as I work because it doesn't distract you from your work, but it does let you kind of focus without the distraction. I think that's really, really cool. How about some ambient music? This is Moby's. It's got a great name too, LA-12. So what a great way of using your phone in so many wonderful ways, to go to sleep, to relax, to work, to exercise. Calm is the perfect mindfulness app, whether you're a beginner at meditating or an expert. And there's hundreds of programs for intermediate and advanced users. I love Calm. 200,000 five-star reviews. I guess I'm not alone. I think people really love Calm. Get back your calm with the number one
to the Daily Calm
rated app.
Today we'll be exploring the meaning of the word Shempa.
Don't know what Shempa means, but later tonight I will find out. Go to calm.com, calm.com/MacBreak, and get 25% off a Calm premium subscription. That's what I have. You get unlimited access to all the content right away. 25% off at calm.com/MacBreak. Get calm. Stop stressing at calm.com/MacBreak. It helps your health in a lot of really interesting ways. I just getting a good night's sleep for me is so important. And getting to sleep sometimes is hard. They have these scenes too, which if you've got an iPad Pro or a bigger iPad, you can let's the Silent Earth scene. You can have these scenes running in the background, which is just so great. Celestial sunbeams. How about
Let's begin by settling in
a summer meadow,
and finding a comfortable position.
Oh, calm.com/MacBreak. Now, don't get excited. I know you're all relaxed. But everybody's leaving industrial design.
Oh, I'm sorry, I fell asleep.
This is... Actually, not everybody. There's 24 members of the team, but three designers recently left. What's interesting, I was reading this article at the Wall Street Journal, is that Johnny Ive has kind of come back. I mean, he seems like he's more involved than in the past. So who's leaving and how important is this, Renee? You're muted. You got so calm, you fell on your mic.
No, I apologize.
Asleep.
It was the noise outside.
Oh, yeah, that wouldn't have been conducive. The berm building would not have been conducive to calm. No.
Yes, there are absolutely people leaving, but there have been people who've been coming on over the last few years as well. And this reads to me more like a changing of the guard, because that team has been almost completely static. There's been one or two people who've left over the last decades, not just the last few years, the last decades. And now they've got some young blood in that they're really excited about. And some of the people who've been there since like the original iMac, the expression is horrible. I apologize for using it, but some people start to think about spending more time with their money. I mean, family. And once you put in an incredible amount of time and you've created all those products and you have a bunch of hot new young designers who you've brought in, you spend time teaching the culture and the job and everything too, that retirement looks really attractive. Or just the desire to do something else, like, you know, maybe make belts or you know, furniture or something, it becomes incredibly compelling.
You know, what a privilege to have worked there. It doesn't reflect on it in any way. You know, people move on. One of the designers leaving is Rico Zorkendorfer. He said he was taking a break from his professional life to spend time with his family. He felt privileged to work with his family. He felt privileged to work on Apple's design team. But he also said, and this is important, we have incredible new designers, a new generation. Yeah. What we've been able to do the last few decades will continue. The talent is there. There is obviously a lot of continuity. I mean, this is just 3 out of 24, and Johnny Ive is still there. But I think you do need to get fresh blood, fresh eyes in on a fairly regular basis.
Like, do the AR glasses have to look like Dieter Rams? I mean, that's the question we need to start asking ourselves.
Right.
Yeah. I would love it if this kind of were fresh blood. blood and fresh styling came to Apple products. A friend of mine posted he got a new Mac Mini, and he put his cinema display on it, and he had a clean desk. We put it all over, and just showing off, hey, here's my setup now. And I couldn't get over that this is just a flat gray photo. There's nothing, no details, nothing that catches the eye, no lights, no anything. It was just gray rectilinear boxes. And not that we should have, you know, banana shaped computers that have RGB LEDs, but like at MIT Flea Market last week, $3. I had to buy the Apple personal
get?
Modem.
Oh, look at that!
Because
classic frog design. And look at it's okay. I haven't cleaned it up yet.
So all of the Apple beige stuff like that gets yellowed, but apparently there's a liquid
peroxide.
Is that all it is? Is peroxide?
It's peroxide and UV light. But
somebody made an actual product for cleaning the yellow off of beige Apple products.
Someone, after a lot of experimentation, made this special product called they call it Retro Bright. And then of course the internet being the internet, tried to figure out, well, what's in this stuff? And they figured out if you just go to like a beauty supply store and get like a gallon jug of the stuff you bleach hair with, it will actually work just as well.
Yeah, here's the page for DIY Retro Bright. interesting. Yep. So I presume, Andy, you're going to do all of this.
A restoration project. I've been watching too much Bumgartner design, so I'm going to be testing different swabs on this.
But he says that Retro Bright contains 3% hydrogen peroxide, and then the rest is OxyClean.
Good old OxyClean.
OxyClean.
Yep.
Wow.
But all I'm getting at is that like this is such an interesting object, and these lines are for heat venting, but doesn't it make it sort of interesting from various angles? And you have this one piece of color in the Apple logo. It's just a very, very attractive thing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Apple products, for everything that they're good at, and I know that they like clean lines and clean design, that helps make it timeless, but they're just the most boring objects to look at. They're just, I would love to see a new design team that says, you know what, we're going to have like one flash of color before you go out, you're supposed to look in the mirror and take off like all but one accessory. Like, we're going to allow each of these devices to have one bit of flash, one accessory that makes it more endearing, that makes it more compelling. It's like these are, I think that all design needs to go through revolutions and evolutions, that a house style can only last you so long before it becomes predictable and boring and easy.
I'm going to
point. So what you're saying is you want to bring back the Candy Mac.
I would not, you know, if there were a flower power Mac out there, that I'm not saying I would buy it, but it would be on the last two that I would be choosing between.
I'm going to point you to the 8-bit guy on YouTube did a complete restoration and did what he, you see all those chemicals in front of him. I think he used it on his hair earlier because it seems to have disappeared. But he apparently a little later on in the video, you can see he experimented on an Apple keyboard. So you can see the effects of the different chemicals side by side on the keys. Let me see if I can find it. Here it is.
I love his videos.
Yeah. Oh, you know the 8-bit guy.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm a big fan.
I thought you were the 8-bit guy at first, but anyway. So these
I'm at least 16 bits. I'm not that old.
The equal key is the original. Then he tried ozone plus UV, 40% peroxide plus way too much heat, 160-degree heat. Engine cleaner, vinyl cleaner did a pretty good job.
Also took off the keycap. Yeah,
yeah, but it took off the keycap. So yeah, this is interesting.
I think the latest idea is not only the Retro Bright solution, but also put it in a sous vide so that it's a little bit warmer.
Sous vide your modem. Well, you don't care if it stops working. That thing doesn't work, no doubt. And even if it did, who would use it?
I'm not even sure how to test it. Like, there are ports that you have to be really old school to know that that's Apple desktop bus.
ADB,
and you got your I don't even have like an actual phone plugged into my one phone jack that Verizon installed, but it does. I recognize the grounded outlet, but see, but also if it offends me, you can also just pull it right off. And now you can just have this thing that, that you can use as a RetroPie case.
I think that's from the Bible. If thy grounded outlet offends thee, pluck it out, right?
Yes.
I believe that's from the Bible. So they're designers leaving, but you know what? Who knows? This might be a whole new Apple. Look, it has to change from time to time. It has over time. Yeah. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I was really glad to read in that journal article that Johnny returned to day-to-day operations about a year ago. Because it's good to have him back. Hey, here's some bad news. And I found this out from a friend who's a photographer. For years, he followed John Bon Jovi around as his official concert photographer. Right now, he's the official concert photographer for Luke Combs. His name is David Bergman. And he came by the studio on Sunday. I really want to do this workshop. Andy, you should do it too. Live concert photography workshops. You actually get to be in the pit of a Luke Combs concert, and he trains you on how to get the best images.
I need that too.
Isn't that cool? Well, he's coming to Guilford, New Hampshire on June 15th, if you want to. Only five people get to join him for that. Anyway, David, I asked David, because I always do when I see a pro, and this guy is a pro's pro, really good photographer. What's your workflow? And he stunned me. He said, aperture. He said, I never stopped using. Yeah. He said, I don't use Lightroom. I use aperture. I never stopped.
Bum.
Well, bad news, David.
Yeah.
This is the last Mac OS version that will support aperture, because I guess it's 32-bit. Is that why, Renee?
That might be why. I actually didn't think about that. But Apple announced a while ago that it was going to be, removing official support and then removing even accidental support.
So it won't run.
That's probably a big indicator. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were on your own for a while, and now you're out of luck.
An announcement on an Apple support page, and of course on the support page, they do something that must kill Apple. Migrate your aperture libraries to Photos or Adobe Lightroom Classic. I don't think Photos is a suitable replacement for a professional photographer. Lightroom might be.
That really was a shame, because I think one of the great things about when Apple designs applications in-house, they really do show off how great the Mac user interface can be. When you don't, because Lightroom, I decided that I had to switch to it after Apple decided to just basically let aperture become a wild thing foraging out of garbage cans and fend for itself.
Is that you? I hope that's you. Are they building the berms with hammer and saw? Is that you, Renee, the hammering? Or is this somebody else?
Yeah, now, no.
I think it's Russian troops coming across the Kamchatka.
They're closing doors. They're sandbagging things. They're walking around, Leo. It's just, I'm going to have to move to Petaluma.
It's all right. No. We can deal with it. We can live with it.
But all I was saying is that Aperture was wonderful. I loved it. I had the opportunity to switch to Lightroom when Aperture was still a viable thing, but I preferred Aperture because it was such a Mac app, whereas Adobe, they can't make a special version for the Mac and a special version with the Windows interface. So it's always going to be a little bit less than. So it makes me a little bit sad when Apple stops making an in-house app, because that's really how you show how good the ingredients of a Mac interface are. But the thing is, they didn't axe it before they had to axe it. So at this point, if you haven't switched to Lightroom, if you haven't made an exit plan for Aperture yet, you really have no one to blame.
Why did Apple hire a professional philosopher? Turns out, this is a story.
Is that your philosophy question?
Yes, it's a philosophical question. No need to answer. Joshua Cohen, who used to teach political philosophy at Stanford, has been employed as a philosopher at Apple, as an Apple Distinguished Senior Fellow, since 2011. Works full-time at Apple University, occasionally does outside talks, but most of the time his work is confidential, and Apple even refuses permission for him to be interviewed. Quartz attempted to interview him, says that Apple denied permission, and concludes the company is against open discussion about philosophy.
That's such a ridiculous statement.
We have some proprietary philosophies we just don't want to share with the rest of the world. That is wild. Former Yale Dean Joel Padone is also there.
What's not mentioned is that 99.9% of the people you'll ask to interview at Apple will be denied.
Yeah, they don't want anybody to talk.
Yeah, and I mean that article goes on to say that he also goes around and does other speaking engagements. So it's I'm imagining that it's not Apple is saying that he can't talk to people about philosophy.
Right.
It's that he can't talk to people about Apple.
Yeah. He also is editor of Boston Review and has been since 1991. So he writes articles there. He's doing his own academic research. The real thing I wanted to know is, well, what is this Apple University and how can I go there?
Yeah, right. It sounds fun.
It's
Ben Thompson worked there for a while.
Did he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was an intern at Apple University. It was basically their attempt to codify Apple culture post Steve Jobs so that Apple itself could become a product.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. That's actually a brilliant idea.
I think it also has its roots in Steve's return to Apple, because when Steve ran Next, he also had sort of an internal, not as big as Apple University, but the idea of here is a place where you can, we're going to create our own course, where we're going to create our own study, where, as a matter of fact, one of the, I think the dean, so to speak, of that school was even one of the former Flying Karamazov brothers, believe it or not. But yeah, it's one of those
juggling
things
troupe, I might point out.
Yeah,
very good.
I think there's a
Pixar University too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Interesting.
Right. Yeah. So I think that at Pixar's Pixar University, even if you're on the sanitation crew, if you want to learn art, if you want to learn how to rig lights, you can actually take classes on rigging lights. They believe in whatever you're doing. You can learn anything else, just as a personal improvement sort of thing. I really wish we at some point Apple were to take the lid off of Apple University, because a lot of corporations have something that's kind of like that. I'm not aware of something that's as comprehensive, but it's not like we're sending you to management school to learn how our systems work. It really is like an MBA where you don't get a real MBA. So it's like the University of Phoenix in that regard. But we're going to teach you why Apple does things the way that they do. And so if you actually were to move to another company, you would be taking principles with you. That's not about copying Apple's principles so much as learning how to be a good manager, how to be an engineer, and I'm sure the philosophy is part of it, because again, that signpost, the intersection between liberal arts and engineering philosophy. If nothing else, it's good to have something so that if you are a kid majoring in philosophy, you can tell your parents, you see, Apple is hiring philosophers. It's not the most... At least it's not a communications degree.
It's probably the case studies that didn't turn out so well for Apple and the lessons learned that they're not so interested in seeing plastic.
I mean, few companies have their own university, but a lot of companies, when I worked for Ziff Davis, they would pay for continuing education with the one stipulation, it can't be in anything you're doing at Ziff Davis. The theory being, we don't want you to get better at what you do now. We want you to get new skills you could bring back.
Yeah.
So I think that's not unusual. I think that's good. We don't do that here at Twit. I'm sorry, Carson, you're not. No. You already went to Harvard. You don't need any more education. You need less education.
Always learning.
You have to learn about bolo ties. Let the man learn about bolo ties.
They give you access to the internet and a lack of supervision. You can learn about whatever you want.
It's really true.
The time you spend inside the office.
It's really true. I am. You know, we're going to be in Athens in the fall, and there's an online course, Yale course in Greek history and philosophy. That's free.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to take the course so that I kind of am prepared. We're going to spend a few days in Athens, and I want to be ready to understand what I'm seeing. I just think that's just so exciting, so cool. Let's see. Power Beats. Are you going to buy some, Renee?
Yes, but I'm not a big audiophile, so yeah, that's all Lori Gill.
We're going to get Lori to do it?
Totally own that. Yeah.
So hard. I'm so excited about it. I think I've mentioned this before that the AirPods are not very comfortable to me to wear. Like, they hurt.
Yeah.
But I love the convenience of them. So I am so excited about Power Beats Pro coming out with the H1 chip. So it's going to give me all the things that I love about AirPods, but it's going to be hopefully less painful, a little more comfortable.
Things you love about AirPods for $100 more.
Yep, and less painful.
Pre-orders start on May 3rd. That's why I'm bringing it up. You can actually now buy them. and you'll get yours May 10th. So I expect, Lori, you to tell us all about them following MacBreak Weekly.
I will probably be wearing them for our next next meeting.
Nice. Yeah. I think did we talk about this last week? They're gonna be more that Beats profile of sound, though. Heavy beat, bass heavy sound, we think, right?
Right. Yeah.
All right. I'm not going to run
Andy
out and
won't
get
them.
Nope. I'm going to let Megan get them. Megan's going to get them and review them for us. Because I like a flatter sound myself. Let's see. According to Ming-Chi Kuo, there'll be two new AirPod models in the fourth quarter. Ming has been a little off lately. So I'm not sure I'm going to believe. He said there'd be a 16-inch.
I think people are confusing this. So, yeah, I think this is not. It's not that it's not being reported well, but I think that there's a lot lost in the translation. That what he's talking about is sort of like the, I'm not going to call them ProPods just because I don't want that branding to go everywhere, but they'll be like a slightly higher end AirPods for people who are willing to pay more for noise cancellation, waterproofing, a few of those features. And hopefully as those become the premium, the current AirPods will go down in price, like the iPad Pro versus the 9.7 inch iPad. But I think the second one is probably those over-the-ear versions that we've heard about previously, which would be an entirely different form factor. And then you can see Apple starting to build out its like wearable product line.
Interesting. All right.
Lori has to review those too. Sorry, Lori.
Yeah, so many headphones. I'm down though. I can't wait.
We got to hurry up because about 20 minutes from now, Apple's going to send out its press release, the quarterly earnings. I like to ask this. We won't be able to talk to them till next week. We'll talk about them till next week. But I'd love to hear your thoughts about what we'll be looking for. This is the second quarter. The first quarter is the big quarter for Apple. So this is not a big quarter. What do you think, Renee?
It's not traditionally a big quarter. We're going to hear about iPhone numbers just because iPhone is such a big business. And like we saw with Google and Samsung earlier this quarter, it's not a big growth business right now, so it's going to be a lot of drama surrounding the iPhone numbers. We'll also should hear about the services, which, again, I like that Benedict Evans sort of take on this, where Apple's pivoting from it just works to you can just trust us, and they're starting to build out, instead of the digital hub, sort of like the services hub, where you can get a lot of your stuff inside Apple with tools that are simple and easy to manage and add to and remove from and all of those things. And then I think we'll maybe hear, we heard rumors about WWDC already, but we might hear Tim throw out some words about autonomy and augmented reality just to sort of throw red meat at the salivating lions that are the analysts on the call. So you have something to chomp down on that's not him and Luca.
I'm looking at Neil Seibart. He writes the Above Avalon blog, his predictions, and I see a lot of negative signs in the year-over-year growth for revenue growth. Now, again, this is a prediction, not the actual numbers. He does see a big growth, though, in the wearables segment, in iPad revenue.
They basically have
Mac
no competition. If you look at it from Silicon, from Qualcomm, from Alpha, like there's no one selling, no one producing, selling, or making wearables anywhere to the quantity that Apple is. And that's going to be a huge growth factor in real, like near future, really personal computing.
Yeah. Also services. We'll expect to see growth there. Yeah. It's just the old iPhone that's not going to be such a big growth.
As usual, I'm looking forward to analysts' questions that come afterward.
That's where you learn,
Because this is the one. This is the one place where the CEO of a company can get questions that they're really not prepared for beforehand, and whatever they say will create legal responsibilities if they waffle, if they lie or misdirect in any way, shape, or form. So it's always that's why these kind of earnings calls are always really, really interesting.
Well, nothing more to say except stay tuned. Go to iMore.com in about half an hour.
Renee will be the transcripts. You'll be able to read every single
word. And guess who's doing the transcripts? Taking over from Serenity
Caldwell.
Not me.
Micah's doing it.
Oh, Micah Sargent. All right. Even better.
Yes, he's my shining star in the dark night because he always does them for us, and I'm so grateful to him for
that. He could type really fast.
He has panache.
Panache. Mm-hmm. His typing is so stylish.
We tried to do transcripts for Elon Musk once. It is so much harder than Tim Cook.
Really? Well, Tim so is a very leisurely
Tim is so
speaker.
Clean, but he speaks also so cleanly. There's not like It makes you really appreciate Tim Cook after you know a few other CEOs.
So, will all three of you be listening? Lori and Renee and Micah. Okay, and Andy too. All right.
Yep.
Of course.
Awesome. We'll look for your reports. And it may even, sometimes it happens a little before we end up winding up the show, but we're going
to do. It's such an interesting game because they know Apple won't answer direct questions. So they try to ask the question they want in as obtuse a way as possible. Like, can I have some color surrounding what your thoughts about? And it's like this cat and mouse game because Tim knows what they're doing. Yep. So it's just fascinating. It's like game of not thrones, but game of please throw me a bone. It's very, very interesting.
There's also that moment where somebody asks a question that gets them to kind of like, oh, you know, we can drop this little thing that's really going to excite them, but we're not really saying anything, but I want to say something about it so bad. So I'm going to just drop this little bit of a tidbit. Like that's the stuff I'm like grabbing onto when I listen to these things, like, oh, I think I understand what he was talking about just now. I get where he's going with this.
He says, this is Tim, even though the only other person on the call has a really heavy Italian accent and he has a really good Southern accent. But every time, this is Tim.
Yeah. The most fun part is when it's kind of like a game of password where there's the phrase that you're not allowed to say, neither one of you, like that you can't say release date for the self-driving car. However, they're willing to give you answers so long as they don't have to say that phrase. So there are times where like I'm interviewing or having a conversation with, or I'm on a call with like one of these people. And so long as I phrase this in terms of, I can't ask when are you going to be adding plugin extensibility to this product? But I can say, how is this? Can you give me an idea of how well this is architected? For instance, there's a lot of future technology that this platform should be prepared for that I'm not seeing in the original specs of the product that allows them to say that, yes, we got plugin support, but I can't say that we've got plugin support. It's hysterically funny.
We're very bullish on the future of self-driving cars.
Do you think they actually Tim kind of wants to say stuff?
Yeah, I think so. So in some circumstances, I bet they're just bursting at the seams wishing they could tell people like the most
awesome
thing.
Maybe they go home and
doing.
Do it. They go home, have a little drink and say, this is what I wanted to say.
They sit in front of a camera that's not turned on and say all of those things.
Do they not do so out of prudence or because of regulations?
Absolutely.
Probably just to keep their company from you know, if it is in an earnings call, if they're going to start saying,
so,
I mean,
careful,
look what happens. Look what happened when Apple announced the AirPower.
Right.
The hubbub around the fact that they announced something that they never put out. If they're just constantly saying, yeah, we're making a self-driving car in the future. If they just straight out say that, that's just a mess.
Well, and ain't nobody want to be Elon Musk in a call, just saying stuff and getting fines and going crazy.
How deep in do you have to get for the government to assign rules to how you can use Twitter?
That's like
what a 14-year-old has to deal with their mom or their dad saying, I'm going to change the password to your Twitter every single week, and if you want to tweet something, you have to come to me.
But that's like Elon then saying, but dad, your tweets are cray cray. And dad said, well, I'm the dad or president or whatever.
Oh, come on. You didn't know that I was joking when I, the CEO of a tech company, talked about having an IPO and what the stock price would be? Clearly, I was. I had the colon.
The 420 should have been the giving away. Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. Get your picks ready, folks. But first, I'm going to show you my pick. That's this. No, not the iPad mini, although we are running it on iPad mini. It's Envoy, which is the modern way to welcome guests to your business. When you come to Twit, you guys know this. In the past, there's been a long multi-page document that you've had to read and sign before we'd allow you in. Now, you just get to the Envoy app, you tap to sign in, enter your name, we show you what you need to know, you sign, and you're done. Envoy is the modern way to welcome guests and still preserve your security. You feel welcoming, but you're also protecting yourself. It's an iPad kiosk that makes workplaces more efficient. When visitors arrive, they sign in an iPad kiosk. They enter their details. They sign any legal documents. In our case, it's a waiver in many Silicon Valley companies because they all use it. It's an NDA, and they sign it right on the iPad. Envoy then, though, does a lot more. They notify, for instance, the host, whoever the guest is there to visit. They'll automatically alert the employee when the guest arrives. Using whatever you use, Slack or Chatter or whatever it is you use, saving you time and hassle. Your employee knows who's coming, knows when. No more, oh, come, you're in the lobby. Be right there. No awkward meetings. And by the way, when a VIP comes in, you can mark those names VIP and you make sure they get great treatment. There's another Envoy app we use all the time, which is Envoy Deliveries, which keeps, you know, our delivery guy uses. And we use to notify people your package is at the desk. It's a great way to keep from losing packages. You'll boost your office efficiency with smart security that doesn't scare people. It doesn't seem unwelcoming. It just seems friendly. No more paper logbook, which really is kind of useless anyway. Sign in unlimited visitors. Yes, you can connect it to a printer to print customized badges. You can send alerts when VIPs arrive. You can notify administrators about unattended guests. Integrates completely with existing security systems. So, for instance, you could give people Wi-Fi access. You could say, oh, here's our password. It could do ID checks, emergency notifications. And you'll have data on everybody who's come to the office so you know who's coming, when they're on site, who they're meeting, and why. Now, we're a tiny little business, so it's not as critical for us. But imagine a Silicon Valley business with multiple buildings, multiple visitors. 10,000 workplaces worldwide choose Envoy, not only because it makes a great first impression, but because it preserves your security. Nike uses it, Pinterest, Spotify. 30 million visitors welcomed to date. It works with G Suite and Box as well, designed to meet your needs, at even compliance requirements and security requirements. Doesn't matter what kind of business you're in, even highly regulated industries, Envoy works. Protect your people, protect your property, protect your ideas the welcoming way with Envoy, E-N-V-O-Y. Go to envoy.com/twit. Start your free trial today. Envoy, envoy.com/twit. We thank them for supporting Mac Break Weekly. And thank you for supporting us by using that URL, envoy.com/twit. Mr. Inatkosa, your pick of the week.
My pick is something awesome that I came across on Reddit. A user by the name of Everyview 3D printed a case for his Apple Watch that turns it into an iPhone Nano, if you can believe it. So you take the watch off of its band, you snap it in the middle, and then you snap your AirPods, the one on above it, one below it, so the one is acting as an earpiece.
Oh, that's
the other is acting as a microphone. So if you have like these, if you have the cellular version of the Apple Watch, you'll be able to take and receive phone calls. You'll be able to get text messages, and he thoughtfully uploaded the 3D file so you can print one off for yourself. But I'm hoping that someone will either ideally license this idea from him or rip him off, because the number of times like you've been like at a wedding or some sort of function where you know that if you have a phone in your pocket, you're going to wind up spending time on the phone because family weddings are super boring. But this will give you like everything that you need a phone for without having something that's about the size of a credit card. Or if you are one of these people who part of the culture that does not have society does not give you clothing with pockets, that this will be something you can actually put in your pocket. It just looks, it's such a cool idea and such a lateral idea that I kind of want to send them like $100 Dunkin' Donuts gift card or something for this, because it just looks like such a neat idea.
Well, speaking of cool and neat ideas, Alex Gumpel's pick for you, Andy, is Helmut Esslinger's book about frog design. Keep it simple. The early design years of Apple, in which it has a lot of illustrations of exactly the kinds of things that you were showing and you picked up at the flea market. And what I really love about this, thank you, Alex Gumpel, for bringing it in, is you see the genesis of the ideas. So you can see the original sketches. You can see their thoughts, designs that didn't make it off the drawing board. And I think your modem's in here somewhere. So this is a really beautiful book. Alex Gumpel, which is weird, is our Windows expert. But he, for some reason, collects vintage Mac stuff. I just don't get it. Keep It Simple. It's available still on Amazon in paperback as well.
Well,
as
again, you've been around for a while. Which would you rather have, a Gateway PC or a Frog Design Apple II CI?
Oh, absolutely. The Frog Design stuff was so gorgeous. And the funny thing is, Acer and a number of other companies said, oh, how come Apple's, you know, got so much better looking stuff? Let's try to make a good looking PC. And man, they made the worst looking stuff. Oh my God, it was horrible. Lori Gill, your pick of the week. What do I have to buy this week?
So actually, I think you're off the hook this week. I am channeling my Jim Dalrymple here. Last night, I was sitting in the backyard having a beer, and I decided to check out what Apple Music had on, and a classic metal playlist popped up for me. Here's the thing. And no slight on the people that curate these playlists, because they work hard and they probably have a pretty large mandate. But usually when it comes to niche stuff, they're terrible. And when it comes to my particular preferences in metal, I've been disappointed every time. But I popped this one up and I thought, I'll give it a try. And I would say 90% of what's on this list fits what I think is considered to be classic metal. There's a few stinkers in there. There's a few in there that I'm not sure why they would put that on the classic metal list. But overall, you get the idea. They're pulling from what you would consider maybe the new version of a particular type of metal. Like, for example, there's DRI in there, which they were hardcore punk that switched over to metal. And so they're kind of like the progenitors of that particular type of metal. You have, you know, Slayer, who were kind of the beginnings of thrash metal. So it's not classic metal in the way that it's only like the classic rock that kind of transitioned to metal. It's sort of broader stroking in that, but I thought they did a pretty good job with this. So if you like metal music, especially if you like early metal, if you like, you know, like Sabbath and stuff like that, this is a pretty darn good playlist. I think you'd be happy with it. Again, a couple of stinkers, but really considering how difficult it must have been to build a playlist this long, I think they did a good job.
It is long. Mm-hmm. It ends with Inagata De Vita, which cracks me up. Begins with Metallica 1 and ends with Inagata De Vita. I would guess that this is because there's one person in the music department that loves this genre, right? And so this one person put it together.
I think so. And again, it's only because I've tried a lot of the metal playlists that Apple puts out, and I just go, what? Yeah. This, what are you thinking? Yeah. And this one really seems like it came from somebody who listens to metal all the time and really kind of understands it. So I was really happy with that one. Kudos to the person that created the classic metal playlist for Apple Music.
Very nice. Good recommendation. If you're new to metal, here's everything you need.
Yeah, it's a good starting point.
If you want to bother mom, play it real loud. Renee Ritchie, pick of the week.
So there's a variety of these apps. So I just linked to the developer's homepage. It's Aaron Pierce, and he makes a bunch of really cool HomeKit apps. Ah. So the one that was just updated today is called Home Run, and that lets you set up a bunch of different easy-to-access scenes right on your watch. So you can look up, hit the complication, hit the scene that you want, and it makes it super easy to manage. He has Home Cam, which will take multiple camera sources and put them all on one screen for you, so you can sort of get a whole glance at your home or your office or your building. He has one that just lets you store your HomeKit codes, because sometimes, you know, it's on the peripheral. Is it on the box? I don't remember where it is. And then you're trying to re-register it, and it's just a nightmare. So he lets you store it. And he also has HomeKit. Sorry, there's a fourth one, the scanner. That's right, the Bluetooth scanner that lets you sort of try and diagnose problems. Because if you don't have a HomePod or an Apple TV, which acts like a range extender and retransmitter, you might have issues if the wall is blocking it or if it's out of range or something like that. And it can save you a lot of headaches trying to figure out exactly what's going on there. So he didn't make one ginormous home app thing that you have to go and get and install everywhere. Instead, he made very specific, almost surgical tools for very specific HomeKit tasks. And they work really, really well. He spends a lot of time and effort trying to get them to the point where they just do exactly what you want them to do. And if you're all in on HomeKit like I am, or even if you just have a couple things and you're interested in it, they help make the experience just that much better.
Thank you, my friends. Another Mac Break episode coming to a close. Lori Gill has to go do a lot of listening to Tim Cook. She's a managing editor at iMore, at Appaholic on the Twitter, APPAHOLIK. And, of course, Sick Burn. I knew there was a sick in there somewhere.
You're Californian. You know, Sick Burn, man.
Is her band. Catch her wherever you can. Now with pink hair. I like it. Rene Ritchie, also at iMore, where he leads the Vector podcast, among other things, imore.com/Vector. He'll be busy in about 5 minutes. I'm going to let you go early here. And
hey, this is Tim.
Yeah. Hi, this is Tim. Go Roll Tide.
Wait Good minute, morning.
No. He's War
Good
Eagle.
Good morning.
He's War Eagle. War Eagle. yeah, I like that. Good morning. Andy Iannacco, you'll hear him on Boston Public Radio. When?
Next up is, I think, Monday of next week.
All right. WGBH in Boston. Of course, you'll catch all three every Tuesday for Mac Break Weekly, round about 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC. You could tune in and watch or listen live at twit.tv/live. If you do that, get in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. That's where all the cool kids are hanging out while they listen live. You could also listen on demand, because it is that thing we call a podcast, on-demand versions of our shows, all of them available at twit.tv, both audio and video. twit.tv/MBW if you want to go right to the Mac Break Weekly page. And you know, we'd love it if you would subscribe, whether it's Luminary, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, Slacker, iTunes, or Google, whatever your podcast program of choice is, you can always find Mac Break Weekly. And if you subscribe, then you don't have to think about it. You'll just automatically get the next episode the minute it's available. Thanks for watching and listening, everybody. We appreciate it. But now I'm sad to say it's time to get back to work, because, in the words of Alex Lindsay, break time is over.